Hey everyone, and welcome back to Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn Pop Culture blog, which can be found at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is Jasper, Pop Scorn's head dork, and joining me today, and probably forever, is Ghostface Milla, a writer at the Roundtable Music Blog. You can read him and download his weekly mixes at www.theroundtableonline.com. On this episode, we're going to be discussing Bridesmaids, the new comedy from super producer Judd Apatow, in which co-writer Kristen Wiig plays a dejected confectioner who becomes more than a little stressed out when she accepts maid of honor duties at BFF Maya Rudolph's wedding. It probably goes without saying that chaos ensues. Roll the clip.
Lillian, honey?
Just so pretty. My stomach hurt.
Lillian, I don't know what to say. You look...
What?
No. Megan, are you okay?
No.
Oh.
I think my dress was probably just tight.
Oh, my God. You got food poisoning from that restaurant, didn't you?
No, I had the same thing that she had, and I feel fine.
Oh, my. Okay.
Oh, no.
Nothing's happening. Oh, my God.
You know, I don't really care which dress we get. It doesn't matter to me. I just need to get off this white carpet.
No, okay. God. No, not the bathroom. Oh, everybody, go outside. I'm serious.
So, Ghostface, do you love weddings as much as I hate them?
I don't know if I love them as much as that. I think they're just okay.
Because one of the things about Bridesmaids that I really enjoyed, and I did really enjoy this movie, but one of the best things about it, I thought, was its depiction of how if you're in a wedding, and I don't know if you've been in a lot of weddings, but if you're in a wedding, you're thrown together with this cross-section of weirdos who you probably have, like, nothing in common with, and you're just stuck with them for the better part of however long the planning stage of the wedding is. I mean, at least a few days.
Yeah, I mean, I loved that, and I loved that they totally explained all these, like, tangential relationships. You know, like, oh, this is, like, so-and-so's boss's brother's wife, you know, whatever. Like, it was always someone that was kind of random, and it just made it even more awkward, you know, because, like, certain people didn't know the bride very well, and they definitely didn't know each other at all, and when they kind of, they were all pretty uninhibited, but I loved that. I loved that there was just, like, they were just this total ragtag team of, like, just crazy women that were kind of put together. It's great.
And it's a cross-section of a lot of really talented comedians, because not only do you have Kristen Wiig, who some people inexplicably really hate her, I can't figure that one out at all.
Yeah, I don't know why either. It baffles me.
Yeah, you have her, you have Maya Rudolph, and they're probably the two funniest female comedians on Saturday Night Live from the past 6 or 7 years, even though Maya Rudolph's not there anymore. But Melissa McCarthy, who is just a genius, I think.
I just need to say something. I really hope that, like, this propels her into, like, the upper echelon of everything that she's ever deserved, because yeah. I think she completely stole the movie. I mean, I'm glad that she had a bigger part than I thought she did from trailers and stuff, and she just made it for me. You know what I mean? She just really owned the character, and she is hilarious.
And also, I mean, talking about Melissa McCarthy, it's interesting because based on the trailer, I was, like, really concerned for that character because I couldn't tell what direction they were going to go in. I'm like, are they making her, like, the stereotypical lesbian, or, like, what's going on with this character?
Right.
It's really weird because she is sort of a collection of mannerisms, but she's also, and I think this is where the movie really scores, she ends up being a real person.
Yeah, no, she's totally real. I mean, from the second she opens her mouth, she's totally real, and that's what I loved about her. And I think she just immediately starts off with, like, I fell off a cruise ship. And it's just, like, that weird shit that you're just like, I don't know you, lady, why are you telling me this? But she seems like such a real person. But yeah, I totally agree. I remember seeing trailers, and, you know, she's kind of dressed very butchy, and her hair's pulled back, and she's, like, they're making her look like she's not wearing any makeup and all that stuff. And I remember thinking, like, if she's going to be, like, that one person who hits on everyone, you know, every female in the whole movie, and it's always being like, you know, like, I had to hit that kind of thing, but not in, like, a Strangers with Candy, like, over-the-top kind of way, just in, like, a very straightforward, you know, like, I'm the lesbian kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought was going to happen. and it didn't, and I loved every minute of it because it really did add, it added to her, like, her whole personality and her whole self-esteem and just, like, why she is the way she is. I just loved it. And yeah, you're right. She was totally believable. She felt like a real person. I mean, they all did in their own way, but her especially, she owned it.
And especially in a movie like this where a character is sort of at the end of their tether and they need somebody, I mean, it's a trope, but they always need somebody to come and talk them into doing the right thing in the end of the movie. I was really surprised that that person turned out to be Melissa McCarthy, because you don't think that it's going to be.
Yeah, I definitely did not think it was going to be her. I mean, I thought it was going to be Maya Rudolph in some weird way.
Yeah.
And, like, they kind of did end up doing that, but, like, they did it in a way that, like, Melissa McCarthy came on first. And then, I mean, there's actually several people who played that role.
Yeah, she was the first in that whole sequence, though. I mean, the whole last, 30 minutes of this movie is mostly heart-to-hearts with people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I loved it. I thought it was really great. I loved that it wasn't one thing that made her do it. You know, like, even after Melissa McCarthy kicked the crap out of her, she still kind of, like, dragged her feet and was like, oh, whatever. But yeah, no, I mean, I thought... I just loved her. I feel like I don't know anyone like that, but like when I watched her, I was like, I know you, you know? Like,
yeah. And in reality, it wouldn't be just one thing. Like, nobody ever has that one heart-to-heart that changes their life. They have to be pushed into doing something else that pushes them into doing a third thing, and then that's when the change happens. That's one of the things that I think Judd Apatow movies get right. I'm not saying that they're all necessarily good. Lord knows I'm not a fan of Superbad. But I feel like comedies like this really get the realness down. And I think it has something to do with the ad-libbed nature of the humor. Like, everything in this movie feels really loose and really improv'd.
Yeah, it's weird, because, like, I've actually read the script, and a lot of it is, I mean, the scenes are there, but either the punchlines or just, like, slight things are changed. But the characters are always there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, none of the things, and I've watched the outtakes, which, like, I strongly recommend anyone who hasn't seen the outtakes to go to Funny or Die immediately after this and watch them. They are hilarious. But, like, the characters don't change. Like, they feed them lines, they make them improv, but they always stay in character. And mm-hmm. That's what works.
Yeah.
Pick and choose stuff. And sometimes it's like, oh, you know what? Like, that joke was really funny, but it kind of took away from, like, the plot of the movie, and you'll see stuff that is absolutely hilarious. It's like the funniest shit you'll ever see, but in a weird way, I'm glad it didn't make the movie, because it would have taken you out of it too much, and there was still stuff in there like that, you know, I mean, the whole scene where she's trying to get the cops' attention is, like, completely ridiculous,
yeah.
But it's just enough that it's, like, funny, you know, and it's also, it's Kristen Wiig, and she's hilarious, but... Yeah, I mean, there's so many outtakes where they're just saying different versions of the same joke. You know, it's the same punchline kind of with just, like, different lines, and every single one still supports that character, their motivations, and what they're really like. And that's totally, I think, what you're hitting on is that the character arc of the main character in this film, it reminded me a lot of 40-Year-Old Virgin, and, like, you know, they're definitely bubbling up to something, and you know they're going to get there, and you're kind of wondering, like, what's it going to be that pushes them over the edge? But at the same time, like, you're with them the whole time. You're not like, oh my God, get over it already. You know, you really believe them. This is a real thing that they're going through, and if it happened to you, you wouldn't just change overnight, you know? So, yeah, I like that. There's a nuance there that almost every other comedy, at least American comedy, that I've seen is totally missing.
Yeah, and actually, Get Out of My Head, because the 40-Year-Old Virgin thing I was going to bring up, because so many people are comparing this on posters and commercials and blurbs. They keep on saying it's a female Hangover, which, ugh, first of all.
Oh, no, yeah.
No, not at all. Like, the thing that I really thought of was the 40-Year-Old Virgin, not only in the arc of the main character, but also in how real and lived in the relationships feel in this movie. I mean, there's not...
Exactly.
It doesn't seem like she has many friends, the Kristen Wiig character. Maya Rudolph really seems to be her only friend, except for this, like, fuck buddy that she has, played by John Hamm, who is
right.
pretty funny. So there's not as much there. And the 40-Year-Old Virgin, Steve Carell had this group of people, Seth Rogen, Paul Rudd, Ramani Malko, who were all his friends and co-workers, and those relationships felt incredibly real.
They're almost like anti-friends, or, like, frenemies to him.
Yeah.
They were kind of just, like, this group of guys that, like, they worked together, they knew each other, and we watched them become friends.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, and, I mean, I think it's the same way, right? So it's almost like, and I wouldn't say it's the female version of it, because, like, although it is about a wedding and stuff like that, like, I don't even think it's limited to genders. I think, in a lot of ways, this film could have been made with all men. And depending on, you know, the actors, I think it still would have worked.
Oh,
I think it works better because it's females, because women are hilarious, and they often don't get roles like this.
Right.
I love that there was a movie completely of roles like this that totally worked. But what I was going to say is that it's just, like, rich, kind of, like, just different types of people all come together, and they're all just saying cracked-out shit that is, like, you know, it's just, like, why are you people hanging out? Like, in 40-Year-Old Virgin, it was, like, they happen to all be, like, these guys that work at, like, you know, a Best Buy, Circuit City kind of place. And in Bridesmaids, they all happen to know Maya Rudolph, who's getting married. So, like, they always have, like, something in common. And, you know, and then I loved how, like, there was, like, that added level of, like, competition between, like, the two besties, you know, of Rose Byrne and Kristen Wiig. I thought that was really cool. And it just, it totally, that felt so real, even though it was, like, so ridiculous. I loved that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, comedy is not going to work unless it's grounded in some sort of reality. And I feel like that's where all of these gross-out comedies that are kind of like the comedy trend, that's where they get it wrong. Because there's nothing, there's no base there that you can build on that you are invested in or, you know, you like or think is believable.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's cool about this movie is this is not a gross-out comedy. I mean, there's like maybe one sequence that I can think of where they're all in a bridal gown store trying on bridesmaids' dresses after eating a really dyspeptic lunch. And of course, like, all hell breaks loose and people are shitting in the sink in the bathroom and they're shitting on the streets. But the whole thing that's the funniest part of that sequence for me is not necessarily any of that stuff, and it's not even really the focus of it. The focus is Kristen Wiig trying to maintain that everything is completely okay and she's not at fault for taking them to this restaurant.
Yeah.
And the best moment in that scene is her eating a Jordan Almond.
Jordan Almond, yes, absolutely. I mean, her reactions, like the way she spoke in that scene was so believable, and it walks that line of being, like, over the top and just, like, hilarious, you know, and, like, probably on SNL she would have had to play it up bigger. And I love that I think she's a film comedian, you know. I think a lot of her jokes, she does them bigger on SNL because it's live and she feels like she has to, and that might be why people don't like her. But, I mean, if you watch her in Knocked Up and she steals the scene so quietly in that movie, and then you watch her in Bridesmaids, I mean, this is, like, she's going to be, like, a huge, huge star. I hope so, especially if she can write like this and, you know, come up with these great things. Like, I think she's a really, really good comedic film actress. Like, I mean, just that whole scene, I'm so glad you brought it up. It's brilliant. It's so brilliant.
The sweat, like, streaming down her face, all the makeup running, as Rose Byrne is, like, trying to, like, prove a point. Like, you did screw this up. Here, eat this almond, because I know it's going to make you sick. And Kristen Wiig is like, this is fine, I'm good, everything's all good, as, like, the sweat is pouring down. It's so funny, it's so funny. And I'm glad that she is not lost in this movie. With a cast like this, with an ensemble cast, and you have people like Melissa McCarthy playing these really broad comedy roles, you would think that the protagonist of the movie, as it usually happens, would be completely lost. But Kristen Wiig really, really sells this woman as sad and pathetic as she can be, and makes her something memorable. You don't walk out of the movie thinking only of the small supporting roles. You walk out of the movie also going, wow, Kristen Wiig is super talented and really funny.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think she was also, like, really likable. And I think the character is not always super likable, and even though you're kind of on her side, like, she does things that are a little crazy and a little selfish, but then, you know, I mean, her reaction to things are pretty funny, and I also think that, like, just, okay, so one of my favorite scenes, and this is just something that I don't know if it's just me or if it just seems real and maybe more people do it, but when she first meets Helen, Rose Byrne, and then she's driving home right before she gets pulled over, and she's doing hair flips in the car, and she's like, I'm Helen, I'm Helen, you know, and, like, she's swerving the car and, like, everything, like, it's totally over the top, but it's so ridiculous. But, like, I've done that. You know what I mean? Like, like, I've been in my car, I've been impersonating someone I hate, or, like, reenacting a scene or something, and I love it. And that, it's things like that, like, played by somebody else, you know, who doesn't have, like, the acting and comedic chops, it wouldn't endear you to that character as well as she did.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was with her the whole time, and I was also laughing. Like, I totally understand, like, the aggression that she had and the way that she was expressing it, and I was with her. Like, I loved it.
I would say that she is really believable with maybe one exception. And it's not what I think you might be thinking that I'm going to say it's the scene where she, like, demolishes the shower, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the shower with, like, the cake.
I believed that moment. I mean, obviously, like, it's exaggerated for comedic effect, but I believe that she, at that point, would be completely at her wit's end and do everything that she did. The problem I actually had was there's sort of a subplot where she befriends this policeman, played by Chris O'Dowd, and strikes up, like, a flirtation with him. There's kind of a weird, clunky metaphor early on where they sort of use baking as a metaphor for, like, loneliness. I don't know how successful that is. And then it kind of rears its head again later on where he surprises her after they've spent their first night together with all of these ingredients for making cakes, because he knows that she's a baker who lost her bakery in the economic downturn. And she flips out at him in a way that I was like, I do not buy this scene for 1 second.
Yeah, actually, I mean, now that I think about it, I was kind of like, huh, that's kind of a big reaction. I don't think that was any bad part of Kristen Wiig's performance, necessarily. I mean,
No.
It was more of just like the scene in general. It seemed like kind of a 180. I mean, I think it was necessary to happen, right, for her to be, like, completely alone and to lose, like, the one person that she was kind of getting close to. But, and then also it needed to push her forward so that she could continue baking again or whatever. I didn't look at baking as a metaphor for loneliness. I looked at it as more of like failure for her. And like it used to be something creative, and now she doesn't even find it that creative anymore. But I guess when you're saying she made the one cupcake...
Yeah, like, that's, yeah, I mean, there's a pretty long sequence that's just her completely, you know, no dialogue, just music, I think, where she's baking this cupcake, and it's just, she makes one cupcake for herself, and then decorates it, you know, in this completely extravagant way. That's where I was getting the kind of the loneliness thing.
Yeah, I guess I didn't think of it as loneliness because she still, like, took a bite out of it and enjoyed it. I saw it more of, like, almost like, yeah, I still got it kind of thing. I mean, I totally understand what you're saying, and I think it is loneliness now that you're saying it. But the way that I looked at it was more of, like, her kind of, like, just checking in on her talent, like, just being like, do I still kind of have this? Do I still kind of enjoy this? And I don't think she enjoyed it that much. But what I thought was interesting was that she still ate it. At least she still took a bite out of it, and they showed that to us. Because I was so ready for her to just make it and look at it and then throw it away.
Yeah, yeah, I was waiting for that scene to do something. Like, the way that the scene holds on her is she's, like, looking at this cupcake, and then even after she bites into it, they sort of hold on her for a little while. And it's a really strangely shot moment, because you're waiting for some sort of, like, comic beat that never happens, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's strange.
I was half expecting her to just throw it out because that would have been her, like, but I don't do this anymore, or but I failed at that.
Sure.
I think the fact that she ate it, to me, was like that she's not, maybe she is lonely, but she's not without her skill, you know, or her talent, and I think she still knows that it's there. She feels like a failure at it or something. But yeah, I didn't necessarily think of it as loneliness, but then I remember there was a joke about them talking about baking, right? Weren't they talking, not a joke, but, like, they were talking about it in, like, thinly veiled.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so I think I was just getting that confused with, like, what it actually meant, but I don't know. I liked that scene, even though it was, like, long and whatever, but those are the kinds of things that, like, most comedies wouldn't have, and they contribute to the character, and they're, like, 5 minutes without laughter. That's totally worth it. And that's, like, one of the things that I was like, okay, this has, like, Judd Apatow's stamp on it, you know, kind of thing. Even though I think she wrote that, and it was, you know, kind of her idea, but it was the way that it was handled, I think, was pretty good.
I guess the thing that bothered me the most in that one scene that we were talking about was just that I didn't believe that she would lash out at him like she did, because at that point in her life, everything else had turned into such shit. And here's a guy who's obviously really into her, and he's making these, you know, really grand, like, romantic overtures toward her. And the way that she lashes out, it just struck me as a little too tropey. Like, we have to have this person have a fight with the person who she's going to end up with, or it won't be, like, that traditional romantic comedy last act thing where he, you know, he comes back and there's a nice scene where they drive off together in a cop car.
Right. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. In this case, like, although that is true, and I actually do agree with you, I think it is part of her character, though, for her to, or at least they added it in later and made me believe it, that, you know, it was her, she didn't love herself enough, you know, to really give herself something that made her happy, and that was why she pushed him away, because baking made her happy, and she lost that, and this guy, who's actually really cool and believes in her, is like, hey, let's bake. And she's like, whoa, these are, like, two things that, like, I'm really scared of right now, kind of thing. I mean, that's how I looked at it. And then she even calls Maya Rudolph and is like, you know, what the fuck is wrong with me? Like, I just pushed away this guy. I ran out of there so fast, you know, kind of thing. And so I didn't think we'd ever seen that part of her. You know, I mean, you can infer that much from, like, her one relationship with another dude, which is a bad one, you know, even though it's comical. It's like she just could never feel good about herself after dealing with that jerk and having, like, what is, like, comically bad sex. But I did think that, yeah, that scene was a little jarring.
Yeah, and I feel like the phone call she made to Maya Rudolph after that happened, it was kind of like the filmmakers sort of admitting, look, we know you were really confused by that last scene and what just happened in it, so we're going to have her call her friend and explain to her friend that she hates herself, in so many words.
Yeah.
And she's undeserving of love.
I guess I've just personally done things like that in real life, so I found it believable. Or, like, sometimes you just, like, you know, you just flip out, and you're just, I mean, whatever, I'm, like, explaining Bridesmaids a lot, but in a weird way, like, I thought it was, although it did not gel with the rest of the tone of the movie, or even, like, that character, I didn't not believe it, if that's the right way.
Yeah, I think that was my problem. I just, based on what we knew about that character at that moment, I did not believe that moment would have happened with her. And I know that people do that kind of thing, and, I mean, I'd like to say that, oh, it's happened to me all the time, but I don't think it has. But, yeah, that one moment didn't work for me.
No, I mean, there was this one time when this cop asked me to not bake, but, like, do arts and crafts, and I was like, yo, I gave up arts and crafts, like, years ago. And he just wouldn't understand, so I had to leave.
And that's a true story.
That's a true story.
All right. I once was force-fed a Jordan almond after trying on dresses.
After having bad Brazilian barbecue?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah, it's my cross to bear. So, if you were grading Bridesmaids, what grade would you give it?
I would give it an A. And the only reason I wouldn't give it an A+ is
Holy
because...
Holy crap!
Give it an A?
You're throwing around A+ already. Wow.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really thought it was a great film. Like, this is one of those things that, like, I want to celebrate it because it's filling a void for me.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, like, believable, good comedies that have, like, actual character development. And also, like, I just cannot argue with the cast. And not even the, sorry, I'm going off on a tangent on just this letter grade, but not even the cast, but, like, the random people that showed up that, like, clearly are just, like, Kristen Wiig's friends or, like, comedy buddies that she wanted to highlight, especially the woman on the plane who was like, I had a dream last night and you were in it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, she was a scene stealer, and, like, there was a lot of people like that in this movie that I was just like, they're just breathing all this life into this movie and making it so absurd and yet so believable, you know? So, no, I would totally give it an A. The only reason I wouldn't give it an A+ is because of, you know, the kind of, like, the meandering scenes that were a little too, you know, romantic comedy-ish.
Yeah, I think that's another, like, Apatow thing, where his movies generally have these really loose, really sprawling comedic moments where people just sort of, he lets the actors riff for a while. And in several instances in this movie, I thought it went on a little bit too long. I mean, there is really no excuse for this movie being over 2 hours long. I feel like they could have lost 10, 15 minutes. But the weird part of that is that I'm thinking back through the movie and I'm thinking about all these riff scenes that went on a little bit too long for me. And I'm thinking that even after that point, that threshold where I felt like they were going on too long, something really funny would happen. it would like turn itself back around and warrant its length all over again. So I'm not even, I'd like it to be shorter. I'm a fan of shorter movies. I just, a film like this is what, this is like a 2-hour and 6-minute movie. So it feels a little too long, but I mean, we were going to get like a longer cut probably on the DVD and Blu-ray release anyway. He just gave it to us in the theater probably. Wow, Bridesmaids on DVD is going to be like 2 hours and 45 minutes long. It's going to be like a Pirates of the Caribbean film.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I would say that just based on those problems that I have, I would go B+ with this, but I almost feel bad saying B+. That's not a bad grade.
It's not a bad grade.
I was a B+ student in high school.
Is that the same thing you gave Thor?
Yes.
Interesting.
But you can't equate those grades. You have to say like, how good is this movie within its own genre, right?
No, and so that's what I was just gonna say. And I think that Bridesmaids in its own genre is far greater than Thor in its own genre. But that is my personal opinion.
You're making me feel bad for being a B+ student.
Well, I think I was like a C student, so I shouldn't talk.
And that wraps up another episode of Scorncast. Once again, you can visit The Roundtable at www.theroundtableonline.com. You can visit PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com. And you can email PopScorn at scornpop@gmail.com. Our very special guest has been Ghostface Milla. Our very special theme music is by Bug. And I really should have tried harder in school. I realize this now.